This podcast was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 36. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer, and I'm here with my co-host, Michael Morale. Michael, how are you today?
I'm great, Kevin. How are you today?
Doing great. Excited to be here. And a lot of news to discuss today. We are here for another roundtable discussion talking about all of the latest news in the world of spinal muscular atrophy, and we are focusing on the month of June 2019. Before we get started, please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
Are you interested in understanding gene therapy? ExploreGeneTherapy.com has helpful information about gene therapy, including its history and how it is being investigated for the treatment of genetic diseases. Visit www.exploregenetherapy.com.
All right, well, let's get started with some of the top SMA news stories. So obviously, the big news right now is that AveXis' gene therapy drug, Zolgensma, was officially FDA approved on May 24th, 2019, so just a few weeks ago. We've been covering Zolgensma on this podcast and on our main website for months now, and it's, of course, very exciting that the drug has officially been approved. So on our main website at www.smanewstoday.com, our news department has been producing a series of stories about Zolgensma ever since the FDA approval. This series focuses on everything from the potential impact of the drug to how it could lead to other gene therapies and SMA treatments. So, Michael, in looking at these articles, which, again, our listeners can find online, I have a few questions I just wanted to discuss with you. So first off, and I know you've made videos about this as well, but what makes this drug different from Spinraza?
The key differences between Zolgensma and Spinraza is that Spinraza works by correcting the SMN2 gene. I said this in a previous podcast, but if you look at it like a sentence that has 10 words, if you remove the seventh word from that sentence becomes incomplete. And within the SMN2 gene, there's something called exon 7. And that exon 7 portion of that DNA structure is removed. And so without that exon 7 portion within that DNA structure, we don't get a full-length SMN2 protein that our body's going to actually utilize to sustain and build muscle. So what Spinraza does is it goes in and it binds or reattaches that exon 7 back within that DNA structure to make SMN2 as much of a full-length protein as it can be. Now, what Zolgensma does is it actually goes in and replaces the SMN1 gene. Now, everybody has an SMN1 gene, and everybody should have an SMN2 gene. The reason why we're weak is because our SMN1 gene is either deficient or missing, and so our bodies have to utilize the SMN2 gene, and it produces protein just at a lesser amount. So what Zolgensma does is it actually replaces the SMN1 gene, giving us a full-length messenger or full-length SMN protein. So those are the key differences between Zolgensma and Spinraza.
Right. And it's interesting to discuss, and especially looking at Zolgensma as a gene therapy and you know, especially its effectiveness on infants, which this series also goes into. And I know that's been a point of discussion as well. And something we've talked about is, you know, okay, why is the drug only available to infants initially? But as we can, as we've talked about on this podcast and, you know, as our news team has written about, there is potential for Zolgensma to be available to older patients as well. So that's my next question, is in regards to the potential of older SMA patients with Zolgensma, what are research experts saying right now?
AveXis is going through clinical trials of the intrathecal portion. Now, all of us that receive Spinraza, we receive it intrathecally, which means it goes directly into the central nervous system. Some of us receive the injection in our back. I think you receive yours in your neck, which is called a cervical injection. And some people receive their injection in their sides, but it's all considered an intrathecal or an IT delivery. The Zolgensma treatment is only done right now via an intravenous or an IV infusion. So when these infants are born and they detect SMA and they diagnose it, then they can give these infants and toddlers the Zolgensma treatment through an IV. And their bodies are so small that it gets past what they call the blood-brain barrier. So they are working, they being AveXis, they are working on an intrathecal delivery for those of us that are older. Now, there's some question as to whether or not this treatment will be effective for older people, because you have to remember it doesn't go in and reverse the damage that's already been done. Okay, that's the wonderful thing about Zolgensma. If the child or the infant or toddler is caught early enough, then they haven't gone through the detrimental effects, the the muscle damage, the atrophy that those of us like you and I have had to go through. So there's some question as to whether or not it's going to actually do us any good. I think it will, definitely, just like Spinraza has. But you need to remember, it's not meant to reverse the damage. They haven't quite developed that yet. And not to say that they won't someday, is, you know, as far as they've come in 4 years, it wouldn't surprise me. But, I do think it is going to be available for adults probably by maybe the end of this year or sometime next year within 2020. They are getting, by what I've heard through the grapevine, they are getting some good results with the IT delivery. So I don't think it's very far off.
Right. And it'll be exciting to see and track these developments. And I'll actually be at the Cure SMA conference in just a couple weeks. So I'm excited to see, you know, what they say at the research symposium there, because I'm sure these are questions that will be asked as well. Well, that's great. Thank you, Michael. And so another one of the articles in this series goes into details about the price of the drug. And again, this is something we've also discussed in the past year, but I did want to bring it up again now that the drug is officially past clinical trial and FDA approved. So regarding the price of Zolgensma, how do you think it compares to Spinraza?
The price of Spinraza right now is $750,000 for the first four loading doses.
Right.
And after that, it's approximately $375,000 a year for three injections every 4 months. So we get one injection every 4 months, meaning three injections per year. And those are about $125,000 a piece. So that's where I came up with the $375,000.
Right.
So, you know, the one thing about Spinraza is it's meant for a lifetime. That means we're going to be on these injections every single year for the rest of our life. So, you know, if you do the math, $375,000 per year in 10 years, that's $3,750,000. The price tag for Zolgensma is estimated to be about $2.1 million to $2.5 million. So, and I'm not really sure. I think it's probably closer to the $2.1 million. And so that's why, you know, a lot of people had to go through their insurance with regards to Spinraza and whether or not insurance would pick up the cost. And there's a lot of question as to whether or not insurance will pick up the cost with regards to Zolgensma. I really think they will, because they can see that it's supposed to be a one-time injection. And it is a one-time injection right now for the infants and toddlers. Whether it'll be a one-time injection for those of us that are older once they develop the IT or the intrathecal delivery is still yet to be, you know, determined. But if you do the math, I think a lot of insurance companies will see that Zolgensma may be a higher price up front at $2.1 million. But if somebody's on Spinraza for a matter of 10 years, you're looking at, you know, $3,750,000. Okay. And
right.
That's actually a little bit more than that. You probably need to add the $750,000 for the first four actual loading doses. So
mm-hmm.
I think insurance companies will probably absorb the cost because they see that it is a one-time injection. It's very expensive up front, but in the long run, insurance companies will save money.
Right, right. Well, and it's like, you know, I mentioned this on the forums a couple weeks ago, but I had my eighth Spinraza injection at the end of May. And, you know, at eight injections, my family and I were joking because I'm already at $1 million worth of, and keep in mind too, that's just the cost of the drug itself. It doesn't even apply to the actual procedure and all that. So really, it's been more than $1 million. But yeah, that's the difference, is that, okay, Zolgensma is a one-time thing. While a bigger cost up front, it does save insurance companies money in the long run. And so it'll be interesting, but I agree. I think it will be something that they would be willing to cover, especially considering the effectiveness of Spinraza. So it'll be interesting to see, but but that was important to discuss because I know it is a point of controversy in the SMA community right now, and a lot of people are understandably up in arms about the price of the drug, but it is something to keep in mind that in the long run, it does cost less than Spinraza, because Spinraza is an ongoing thing, whereas Zolgensma is a one-time injection. So so it'll be interesting to see, you know, if the price goes down, what it will look like, a few years from now. But yeah, so, and again, we have an entire article on our main site that goes into detail about this topic. So, and Michael, the other thing I wanted to talk about in regards to this series is the topic of newborn screenings, which is something you've written about many times and done videos about. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, newborn screenings for SMA are when newborns can be tested to see if they have SMA. And that way, if they do, they can be treated very early on. So it can be an incredibly powerful thing for families with younger kids. The fact that they can get treated before symptoms of SMA even just start showing up, that's huge. So, Michael, how does the arrival of Zolgensma affect newborn screenings for SMA?
I think, if anything, it's going to add to the urgency of trying to get newborn screening adopted at the state level. SMA is on the national registry in the United States with regards to screening, but the problem is each state has to adopt it. And until each state adopts it, then no testing is going to be done in those individual states. So I know that there's been a push, especially from, you know, BioNews Services, from Cure SMA, to a lot of other organizations. There's a lot of advocacy groups that are working to really get SMA added to the state level so that this test can begin. So if anything, I think it's going to add to the urgency of trying to get this accomplished at the state level. And I think you'll see it being added more and more probably over the next couple of months.
Absolutely. Well, and it'll be interesting too to see the impact of like other countries, you know, that have not approved Spinraza yet. You know, if this will speed up the process a little bit now that they're two FDA approved treatments out there, if that will have any effect on that. So not just in the US, but beyond it internationally as well. So it'll be really interesting to see. And we will be continually posting updates about this as we learn more information. And Michael, before we move on, one other thing I wanted to talk about briefly was, so the other big drug right now, and again, this is something we don't have a ton of information about, but we've been following, and you know, we have some articles on our main website about, is the drug risdiplam, which is an oral treatment. And it's still in the clinical trial stage, but just based on speculation, you know, it's looking like that this could be the next big drug out there in the SMA world. Do you have any thoughts on this, or any information you'd like to share?
Oh, absolutely. I think risdiplam in and of itself, if they get it developed and if they get it passed through the FDA, it will be the first oral medication. So there's going to be a lot of things if this treatment does get passed. It's going to revolutionize a lot of things, because now we won't have to go into the hospital to get an injection. You know, I mean, we spend at least 3, maybe 4 days a year in the hospital getting these injections. Some people spend 2 days for each injection because some of their doctors keep them in the hospital until the next day so they can monitor them.
Right.
But it will definitely revolutionize the way we do things, because it'll also lower the cost. Because if you can just go to the doctor and get an oral medication, you know, that in and of itself is going to save a lot of money. And by what I understand, risdiplam works very similarly to Spinraza, meaning that it works on the SMN2 gene. Now, I don't have a lot of information, but there's even talk of a possibility of a combination therapy between Spinraza and Risdiplam. So they are looking at it. Whether or not it comes to fruition, again, is yet to be determined. That's what medical scientists and researchers are trying to evaluate now. But Risdiplam will definitely, I think, be a benefit just for cost factors. And again, if it can work on the SMN2 gene to try to improve the output of the protein levels, I think we'll see some definite benefits to it. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement. You know, if you think about it, 4 years we had nothing. And given that Risdiplam will probably go through the FDA approval process sometime, maybe this year, but probably in 2020 of next year, there's a lot of excitement in the air. And we can definitely see the light at the end of the tunnel with regards to SMA patients.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. And I know it's something we've talked about before, but it really is just a time to really be joyful and hopeful. Because, yeah, 4 years ago, and, you know, thinking back to when you and I were diagnosed, you know, I was diagnosed in 1995. And at that time, you know, there were really no resources out there. The organization that is now Cure SMA was just getting started, and there was not a lot of information out there. So it's just crazy to think of how far we've come in each of our lifetimes. And so it's just reason to celebrate. And, you know, I know there's a lot of questions out there, and, you know, there are certainly frustrations for a lot of people who don't have access to these drugs yet. But I think it's still reason to be hopeful and excited for the future and what it'll hold. So, well, Michael, is there anything else you wanted to say before we move on to the next section?
Nope, I think we pretty well covered the topics.
Okay, great. And just as a note for our listeners, we will link the articles in this series, in this podcast, and on the forum. So you'll have plenty of access to those. And again, they are available on our main website. So be sure to check those out. So switching gears, let's talk about some of our recent columns and forum posts moving into the social section of this podcast. So the first one ties into directly what we've been talking about. This is a column I wrote a few weeks ago titled Research Advancements in Adults with SMA. And this was published on, let me look at the date real quick. This was published on June 4th, 2019. So just a couple of weeks ago at the time of recording. And so in this column, what I wanted to do was, you know, in talking about the news regarding Zolgensma, which is great, you know, I also wanted to talk about something I'm passionate about, which is advocacy for adults with SMA and adults with other disabilities. Because as we think about the impact of medical advancements and what it means for treatments to be FDA approved and all of these advancements, we need to think about the implications of that for adults with SMA. Because, Michael, you think about it, it's like for you and I, you know, back when we were diagnosed, like you said, there was really no hope for us. There was a lot of doom and gloom surrounding our diagnosis. And, you know, you and I have both defied those expectations as well as many others. But it now that we have, you know, these treatments out there and those of us who are adults with SMA are living longer and healthier, we need to think about the implications, I think, of what that means. And thinking not just in terms of research, but also, okay, what do we need to ensure that adults with SMA and other disabilities can lead productive lives and have access to things like caregivers and workplace accommodations? So that's basically the gist of this column. And I broke it down into the three things we need most, I think, in my opinion, would be, again, beyond just medical research, would be workplace accommodations. So making sure that adults with disabilities have the proper accommodations that we need. We need caregiver access and funding because, as I've written about multiple times in the past, this is a big issue for a lot of adults with disabilities, and it can be very difficult to navigate the system, our healthcare system, and to be able to afford caregivers and still, you know, hold down jobs and lead productive lives. And then the last is healthcare expansion. And by that, I don't mean, you know, arguing for or against universal healthcare. What I mean by that is that as SMA research continues to develop, more doctors and facilities need to be better equipped to treat those of us with SMA. Because, you know, for someone like me, I'm very fortunate to be very close to Duke Hospital, which is, you know, one of the best medical centers in the country and has some of the leading experts in SMA research. You know, my pulmonologist and neurologist are both regulars at the Cure SMA conference. And so I'm very fortunate in that regard. But I know for a lot of other people, just in the U.S. alone, they don't have those same resources and their doctors are not as well versed in SMA. And that's, you know, a problem we need to look into. So I got, you know, that's really the gist of this column. I will read just a brief excerpt here, and then we can kind of talk about it a little bit. So this is about midway through the column where I talk about caregiver access and funding. So I say, the other day, my mom and I were talking about Zolgensma on the way to my physical therapy appointment. She remarked that she had never imagined living in a world where it could be commonplace for people with SMA to outlive their parents. Yet, that is a possibility now, and we need to be prepared for it. We need to think about advocating for adults with SMA and other disabilities to have better access to caregivers. Advocacy groups and nonprofits should consider raising funds to pay for caregivers instead of just focusing on medical research. So, yeah, like I said, you know, I hope to provoke some discussion with this column. I know it was something I really thought about as I was writing, but I guess, Michael, what did you think about this column? And do you have any questions or thoughts on it?
It's definitely a topic that we need to look at. You know, it's kind of like you said, maybe 4 or 5, maybe even 6 years ago, the likelihood of us outliving our parents wasn't all that great. But now with Spinraza and with Zolgensma, it's definitely, I think it's more than a possibility. I think it's a likelihood that we will. You know, I know that I may not be getting any stronger in my arms with regards to being on Spinraza, but my breathing is improved. My core strength is working really good. Now, of course, I'm doing physical therapy too, which I recommend everybody do. But again, that's something that you need to talk to your doctor about. But I'm feeling better, even though I'm not getting that much stronger, just because my breathing is better, my core strength is better, my balance is better. And again, I think it's a combination between the Spinraza and my physical therapy. So if anything, Spinraza's bought me a lot of time, which, you know, I feel truly blessed about that. But yeah, it's definitely in the cards now that we do need other options in our life now that our life has probably been extended to maybe what, I guess, what most able-bodied people would consider a normal life with regards to, you know, how long we're going to survive.
Right, right. Well, and it, like I said, you know, it's something I've written about before with, like, in regards to, like, workplace accommodations and caregivers. It's like, it's very hard for a lot of us to be able to live on our own, live independently, and be able to hold down a job and afford caregivers, because the way the system is set up, you know, if you want to get government assistance for to help pay for your caregivers, you're only allowed to make a certain amount. And on the flip side, it's like if you're if you exceed your income, if your income is too much to have government services, then you have to pay for caregivers on your own. And it can be very difficult to pay for someone else's salary while also paying your bills and expenses. And that's, you know, an issue that, you know, it really shouldn't be something that good, hardworking adults with a disability should have to worry about, you know, in my opinion. And so that's why it's something I wanted to bring to light. And I mean, heck, I even read a story recently, which I had written about in a previous column, but there was an update the other day about a woman with SMA who's a college student at Georgetown University. She's from New Jersey. And right now she's facing the dilemma of she may have to withdraw from Georgetown come the fall because she's unable to get proper caregiving services right now. And she may have to move back home and go to a school there. And it breaks my heart for that because she's like toward the top of her class. She was valedictorian in high school. And it's strictly a matter of her being able to afford caregivers and having the resources she needs. That's the only thing preventing her. And, you know, it infuriates me and it breaks my heart to hear those stories. But it's something that our world, our society needs to be aware of, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was one of my recent columns. Again, that was on June 4th, and my column, Embracing My Inner Alien, goes up every Tuesday, so be sure to check that out. The next column I wanted to talk about was Katie Napawaki's recent one. It called Trailblazing Toward More Inclusiveness. And this one was published on June 3rd, 2019. And in this column, Katie writes about a speaking engagement she recently took part in. And she writes about how she was a bit nervous about the accommodations there because it was outdoors. And she wanted to make sure that, A, she could be heard, and B, that the venue was accessible. And it's a really cool column. And I love, you know, and this is an issue that or a topic that Katie writes about pretty frequently, about accessibility and outdoors. And so I'll just read an excerpt from this. This is about midway through. She says at one point, within the modern park shelter, ample acoustics elevated my voice and sent it drifting toward all of the ears gathered around me. I turned my speech into a discussion-led session. Framing my background, I explained what SMA is, how it imposes limitations on my life, and how I've risen above some of those challenges. I shared my trail story from childhood, detailing a path I was allowed to explore by myself, and how my parents must have figured that the worst that could happen is I'd encounter a bear, and they were confident in the speed of my wheelchair to outpace it. As laughter billowed toward the high ceilings, I suddenly felt mellow. So, yeah, I thought this was a really cool column. I love Katie's writing style, and I just like how she structures it in a way to showcase her anxieties leading up to the engagement. And again, thinking about, okay, what if they don't have the accommodations I need? And then once she got there, realized that they were very accommodating. She had an old friend there as her caregiver, and it went really well. And so I just thought it was cool. Do you have any thoughts on this, Michael?
I think when you start talking about inclusiveness, you've seen inclusiveness even back whenever I was going to school. You know, there were a lot of social events that were accessible to anybody that was in a wheelchair, or they were walking on braces and crutches. Really, no matter what the limitation was, those individuals could actually gain access to the building and actually participate. And I think you're seeing more inclusiveness now, just because it's in the forefront of the news. You know, back when the Americans with Disabilities Act came out, they fought for to make sure that we were included in these events, that we could get in the buildings that we needed to get into to either eat dinner or shop and just become part of society. So I think inclusiveness in and of itself is something that is a very important topic. I think Katie does a good job at actually pointing this out.
Absolutely. And yeah, no, I mean, you're right in that it has come a long way. I still think there are many ways that it can be improved, and there are plenty of places that aren't as accessible. I'm glad she had a positive experience with this one. But yeah, I think the more we talk about it, the more we write about it, and make sure that society recognizes, you know, our need to be a part of it, like you said, it's all the better. So yeah, I really enjoyed this column. Again, for our listeners, you can read the whole column on our main website. Katie's column goes up every Monday around, I believe, 3 o'clock Central, and it is called A Wildflower in the Wilderness. So yeah, she's a great writer. I definitely recommend checking out more of her work. And lastly, Michael, this was just a really cool story, and this was posted to our forums just this week. So recently, actually this past Sunday, at this year's Tony Awards, actress Ali Stroker became the first wheelchair user to win a Tony for her performance in the Broadway musical Oklahoma. And we discussed this in the SMA forums, and it's just really exciting to see this kind of representation. Did you have any thoughts about this, Michael?
You know, I found it somewhat fascinating as well, but it didn't really surprise me. You know, I think you're seeing more actors and actresses that have physical disabilities that are getting into acting, that are on the big screen, and that will, you know, well, I say a lot on big screen. There's not a lot on big screen, but as far as Broadway goes, so I think you'll see more and more actors and actresses that are physically impaired that will be starting to be recognized. And this was the first, but probably not the last.
Oh, absolutely. And, and you say it wasn't surprising. For me, it kind of was surprising that it took this long for someone to be the first wheelchair user to win a Tony Awards, because, actually, I don't know if you know this, but I did a lot of theater back in the day, and growing up, I really didn't see a ton of actors with disabilities, either on TV or in movies, and so, like you said, it is exciting to see that happening more now, and, I hope we get to a point where, this won't need to be a headline, that there will be, that it'll just be a kind of a natural thing for there to be more actors with disabilities out there, and they're sharing the screen with all the big name actors out there. But it was just really cool to see. And, I followed Ally Stroker for a little while now because she was on Glee. She's been made other TV and Broadway, maybe not Broadway, but many other media appearances before. And so it's really exciting to see. And I enjoy her speech at the Tonys. We posted this in the Disability and Media Forum on Monday. So please check out that discussion. If you haven't signed up for the SMA News Today forums, please do too. Please do so. It is a great place to discuss anything like this, and also anything from disability representation to living with SMA to research, wide range of topics there. So that was really cool. Well, Michael, as always, thank you for joining me today. This was a great discussion. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I would like to add maybe two things here real quick.
Yeah, sure.
With regards to Ally Stroker,
yes.
I think it's going to take screenwriters and people that write television shows. They're the ones that have the ultimate control as to who goes into their movies. So I think these are the individuals that we need to talk to and say, we need more representation. You need to write more roles for people that are in wheelchairs to include us, because I think by doing that, they're going to increase the amount of people that watch it, because let's face it, those of us that are in wheelchairs, if we know that there's an actress or an actor that is in a wheelchair on that show, we'll probably watch it just to see what happens. So I think the screenwriters, the developers of these TV shows, they're the ones that really need to focus on writing more roles for those of us that are handicapped. And then the only other thing that I'd like just to finish up with is, make sure that you listen to our podcast, our flash briefings, our roundtable discussions. We're trying to get everyone the information that they can use, and we hope that they're enjoying them.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, I appreciate you saying that about, getting writers and directors to pay attention to our stories, because absolutely, that's vital. And I think that's what makes shows like Speechless so good, is that it's written by people with disabilities, and it stars an actor who has cerebral palsy. That show recently concluded, but it was a great example of representation, and it had, like I said, it employed not only an actor with a disability in the lead role, but also had writers and producers that had direct ties as well to either they had disabilities themselves or they had family members who did. So absolutely, I think that adds all the more to the authenticity. And and just as a note too, like, this is a topic I'm very passionate about. So I would love to, and for any listeners out there who would want to talk about this more, I would love to talk about this with you on our forums. Absolutely. So thank you for saying that, Michael. And absolutely, thank you for promoting the podcast. For our listeners out there, you can connect with Michael and I directly on the SMA News Today forums, and follow our main website at smanewstoday.com for all the latest updates. And like he said, please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And as always, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. and be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.